Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on capital punishment right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a foreign and alien ideology. Our traditional American values were predicated upon individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, and we covet our neighbor's property and call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures, and we call those Federal Reserve notes. And then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And you know, we're not getting away with our crimes either. We pay up to 75% of everything that we create and produce in taxes. And we live in mortgaged homes owned by savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. And the average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. And then we owe a nearly $9 trillion national debt. We're surety for another $59 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And our financial institutions are leveraged out to about $400 trillion in what we call derivatives worldwide. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. We live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. It's called Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution. It deals with just weights and balances, gold and silver coin. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and hard money and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about capital punishment from Chapter 9 of Alan Dershowitz's book called Contrary to Popular Opinion. And he's got two more stories, one quick one and one takes a little bit longer. Listen to this story concerning the Supreme Court and how it is that they pick your case for appellate review. And he says, the court distorts justice in one of their death row cases, and he wants to bring that to our attention. He says, in a recent case, the U.S. Supreme Court, unlike the wise King Solomon, decided that they should cut the human body in half. The justices ruled that Lionel Herrera's claim that he was innocent of the murder for which he was sentenced to death was sufficiently compelling that review by the entire Supreme Court was warranted. But they also ruled that Herrera should be executed before the Supreme Court decided on his case. Now talk about a split decision. I can imagine Herrera's lawyer delivering the message. The good news is that the Supreme Court is going to hear your case and might declare you to be innocent. But the bad news is you won't be around to learn about their decision because you're going to be executed before they make that decision. Now how did this perversion of Solomonic justice come about? Well, it came about as a result of the Supreme Court's unusual rules for how many votes are required to decide certain procedural issues. In order to decide that a case is important enough to hear, only four justices need to vote to grant the writ of certiorari. This rule, known as the rule of four, makes good sense, since if any significant number of justices want to hear a case, that should be enough to place it on the court's docket. In the Herrera case, four justices voted to hear the argument, according to the Supreme Court rule. But in order to grant a stay of execution, it takes five votes. So the same four justices who voted to hear the case also voted to stay the execution. But the five justices who did not want to hear the case in the first place also voted to put Herrera to death immediately. Now talk about sore losers and talk about gamesmanship. Not a single one of the justices who voted against hearing the case was willing to defer to his brethren and sister. Justice O'Connor was among those who wanted to hear the case. Even on the issue of granting a temporary stay of execution, Now consider what this says about the open-mindedness of the five justices. They are plainly announcing that no argument by their fellow justices or by the lawyers could possibly persuade even one of them to change his vote. Their collective minds are firmly made up even before the case has been briefed and argued. Well, so much for the Supreme Court as a deliberative body. This action demonstrates that the current majority of the High Court, Justices Rehnquist, Scalia, White, Kennedy, and Thomas, are rigid, dogmatic ideologues, totally uninterested in legal arguments or evidence, even when it comes to matters of life and death. They have the votes, and the minority be damned, and the minority may be ignored. Obviously, the rule of four contemplates that if a death penalty case is going to be heard by the Supreme Court, then the defendant will be kept alive pending the decision. Indeed, the High Court has another rule that if a death row inmate dies, even of natural causes, before his appeal is decided, the case will be dismissed as moot and not decided at all. There are no posthumous victories in the Supreme Court. Thus, the decision of the five to let Herrera be executed was a transparent attempt to circumvent the rule of four. It is precisely the kind of gamesmanship about which these same justices complain when the lawyers engage in it. And it came perilously close to working. Lionel Herrera was minutes away from execution when two Texas state court justices granted a last-minute stay. Had it been up to the Supreme Court alone, Herrera would now be dead, despite its decision to hear his case. Now, this is simply intolerable behavior by five justices who are sworn to uphold the rule of law. It makes a travesty of the Supreme Court if asked to defend their outrageous conduct, and being a justice means that you have or you never have to defend your conduct, no matter how questionable. The five justices would argue that since a majority voted against the stay, it's inevitable that Herrera will eventually lose his case by a 5-4 vote. Might as well kill him now rather than later, they would argue. And they are probably right, because the five seem totally closed-minded when it comes to capital punishment. And when the Herrera case is argued before them, they will sit on the bench a bit like the three monkeys with hands over their eyes and ears, but not their mouths. And they will talk plenty during the argument, but they will not be listening. Now, the most shocking aspect of this case is that Lionel Herrera may well be innocent, and another man may be guilty. There is compelling new evidence that his brother Raul committed the murder, but unless Lionel Herrera is kept alive while the High Court considers this new evidence, we will never know whether another innocent man has been executed. A majority of the Supreme Court now seems to regard capital crimes as so heinous that even innocence should not be a defense. Now, there's a little tongue-in-cheek there with that last sentence. But I must agree with Mr. Dershowitz here that this is a case of closed-mindedness, not of the death penalty, but of closed-mindedness to the rule. Now, while they have this rule of four, in which the same five justices who in this case were not predisposed to listen to this case to start with, when they vote, four of them vote and say, well, we want to hear this case. They want the other five justices to sit there and listen to the case. And if you're going to have a rule, then everybody has to adhere to it. I mean, if we're going to have a rule here in America, drive on the right side of the road, everybody has to drive on the right side of the road. Even if you're from England or Japan and you want to drive on the left side, you know, here in America, you have to drive on the right side. That's our rule. We all follow that rule. In the Bible, I've said throughout this series of programs, I said in the Bible there are rules, but those rules can be bent. The creator of the universe has built into the law, his law, some wiggle room when the circumstances so dictate. Let me give you a couple of examples. Have you ever heard that the Sabbath is punishable by death? And I related to you how a guy was caught picking up sticks. He was gathering firewood on the Sabbath. First-time offender. He'd never been charged with picking up sticks on the Sabbath before. He came out of Egypt, and he'd been picking up sticks on Saturday in Egypt all of his life. And now he's a free man. He comes out of Egypt. And yes, he had heard the law. There's no doubt but what he was standing there with the other 3.5 million people as God thundered off the mountain and said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. And remember the Sabbath day, you know. And so, is there ever any exception to the rule on the Sabbath? And the answer is yes, absolutely. There's what we call the ox in the ditch rule. And Jesus mentioned it a couple of times in the New Testament. He says, well, which of you out there, for instance, one time, he says, which of you on the Sabbath day doesn't loose his ass and take him to water on the Sabbath? And the Messiah had to have been healing people, and he usually healed them on the Sabbath. And this really bummed out the religious people. I mean, you know, the preachers and the deacons and all the religious guys, they said, well, look, this guy's working on Saturdays, healing people on the Sabbath. And so the Messiah said the Sabbath is made for man. Man isn't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is made for man. It's a benefit for us. It's not that we're made, you know, and then we have to fit into this intractable rule. Now, the Supreme Court here has made an intractable rule. Evidently, they don't have any wiggle room. They don't have any common sense. And this demonstrates another factor here. You see, the creator of the universe is a master lawyer, a master judge, a master lawmaker. When he passed the law that said, thou shalt not steal, it's the basic building block of private property. That's the law that protects private property. That's the law that guarantees private property. And he said it in four words. It is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration and law to this day. Property and property rights is the holy grail of law. Said it in four words, thou shalt not steal. Another example is the Passover. The Passover is a holy day. There's two holy days in this week called Passover. And those are Sabbaths. And if you violate those Sabbaths, the penalty is death. Now, there's a time for the Passover, and the Passover day itself is on the 14th day of the first month, and then the 15th day and the 21st day are holy days. And this is called Passover week, and there's a requirement that we all practice the Passover. Now, we don't do that. We practice Easter here in the Western world, but we were commanded to practice the Passover. And to show you how racist we are, we call that Jewish, and with a sneer on our face. You know, we can't just say, well, gee, isn't that Jewish, and why would we want to be doing that? No, people don't word it quite that way. That's Jewish. That's the way Christians word it. I'm not quite sure why these Christians, 70 million strong, evangelical Christians, support Israel, but they won't practice the Passover, which is what Moses commanded us in Exodus chapter 12, and the Messiah practiced throughout the New Testament. The Messiah never practiced Easter. He always practiced the Passover. But anyway, leaving that aside, here's this law with a death penalty attached to it that says, you know, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and there's two holy days in this week called Passover. And yet there is an alternate Passover. If for some reason you could not keep the Passover, and then there was a reason came up in the Old Testament, and these guys had been burying people. Now, if you've been burying bodies, you're unclean until the evening, and if you're unclean, then you can't participate in the holy day. And so these guys came up to Moses and said, now look, you know, we're out burying dead bodies here on the Passover, and now we can't participate in the holy days because we're unclean. You know, and we got to go wash and do all these things in order to purify ourselves, in order for us to come back. And meanwhile, by the time we get through with this purification, the Passover is going to be over. And that's the exact same problem that the Supreme Court had. If we don't grant this guy a stay of execution, by the time we decide this, he'll be dead. So here's man's law. Here's the Congress of the United States. Here's the Supreme Court, the chief deliberative body of our judicial system. They can't solve this problem. We've got rules. By God, there's no change them. The creator of the universe has got some wiggle room here. He's got an alternative Passover. It's called the alternate Passover. So if you don't make the first Passover, you wait 30 days, and then for those people that didn't practice the Passover, they were on a trip to a far, far land. You know, they were in Australia when this Passover came up. And so when they come home, then they practice the alternate Passover. The God of Moses is a God of common sense. And not only is he a genius when it comes to law, he's also got some, you know, just down-to-earth common sense. The guy can walk, talk, and chew gum all at the same time. That's why I think he's such an amazing God. He can walk, talk, and chew gum, do all three at the same time. And he doesn't even have a degree after his name. He hasn't been to college, doesn't have a doctor of law, and he hasn't been appointed a justice of the Supreme Court. So I got to tell you, Mr. Dershowitz, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, and I agree with you. But again, this is man-made law that you're dealing with. If we would get off of our dead duffs and stop following after all of these crazy traditions of our elders over here and got back to practicing the law of Moses, I think we'd all be better off for it. Now, there's a second story in here, the last story that I want to cover here today. And Mr. Dershowitz raises the N-word here. He says, is the death penalty rigged by racism? Is the death penalty rigged by racism? Now, many people will take the side, and this is Mr. Dershowitz, he'll say, yes, it is. And then the other side will say, yeah, but all these black people commit more crimes, and so therefore that's why they have a higher proportion of death penalty cases. You know, both sides make sense. Both sides have some truth. There's a third side, though, to this issue over here that everybody on the main two sides, you know, the sides that are reported in the newspaper and on Katie Couric, you know, they never come back to the Bible and say, well, what did God say about this? And don't expect the pulpit parrots, you know, to come in and tell you either, because they don't know. They haven't got a clue. I mean, these religious jerks that stand up here in the pulpit, you know, on Sundays, they couldn't find their hind ends with a roadmap at high noon with both hands, even with directions. Much less code plead the Bible out and come up to a logical conclusion based upon what they learned from their creator. So you don't need to go to religion to get the answer, and you don't need to go to the lawyers because they don't know either, and you don't need to go to the judges, they can't figure it out, and you don't need to go to the politicians because they're the problem to start with. So what is this racism issue, and then how does God propose that we solve that problem? So Mr. Dershowitz starts his article and he says, is the death penalty rigged by racism? And he said, two recent executions, one in Georgia and the other in South Carolina, reveal a terrible truth about how capital punishment really works in our nation. On September the 25th, 1991, Warren McCluskey was executed for killing a policeman during the course of a robbery. McCluskey was black and the policeman was white. Pause right here. According to the law of God, he that sheds blood, his blood shall be shed. Now, assuming that this guy McCluskey actually killed the policeman, now remember our first olive out of the jar is, did he kill him or didn't he? If there's some doubt about it, then we're going to turn this guy loose. We don't have prisons in the Bible. Did you know that? There are no prisons. It's either you kill him or you turn him loose. Now, one or the other. The idea of a prison deals with penance. It deals with religious people. The reason we have penitentiaries and a correctional system here in America is because of the religious people. They didn't get that out of the Bible. They got their corrections. They got their penal system doing penance out of their religions, not from the law of God. And so Mr. Dershowitz, he subscribes to that. What we need to do is lock this guy up, you know, for the rest of his life. Now, here's one of the problems that I see with that. And God, the creator now, he figured this out a long time ago. If you're going to lock this guy up for, say, 40 years, like we did with Charlie Manson, it costs $35,000 a year. That's the cheapest prison in America. It's in Idaho. $35,000 a year is what it costs. In most other states, it'll be double that, like New York and California. It'll be $70,000 a year. There's one prison in the United States in the federal system where it costs $420,000 per year per prisoner to keep them there. That's the highest price. The lowest price is $35 in Idaho. Highest price is $420 in one federal prison. Not all the federal prisons are that expensive. They've just got this one maximum security operation going that throws it up way up high. Now, if you take the average, you know, just the average cost of keeping a prisoner in jail, it's around $70,000 a year. Now, let's lock Charlie Manson up in prison for 40 years times $70,000, shall we? Times 40 years, and that amounts to $2.8 million. Now, Mr. Dershowitz would say, we should lock this guy up for 40 years and spend $2.8 million guarding him and supporting him and feeding him, clothing him, housing him, and doing all those things that we have to do to keep this guy in prison. And Mr. Dershowitz has a point. And the reason for that is, today, the average prisoner that we execute costs $3.4 million. That's right. To keep this prisoner locked up on death row, and I don't know what the average is, but I've heard of prisoners kept as long as 21 years on death row before they were executed. And once in a while, there's one that's fairly fast. Now, over in the Oklahoma City bombing, they took that guy over there. I forgot his name now, but they took him, and from the time that they captured him in 1995 until the time they finally executed him, it was a long time, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't 20 years. And I don't have the average, but my guesstimate is that it's probably around 10 or 11 years. Just guessing. How long do they keep them there? So we're spending $70,000 a year, and maybe death row costs more than $70,000 a year. I don't know if it does or doesn't, but $70,000 is around the number that it costs to keep this guy. And God, the creator of the universe, says, why in the hell do we want to spend nearly $3 million to store this guy in a cage that we wouldn't even do that to an animal? You know, we used to lock gorillas, for instance, in cages, and lions and tigers in cages so that we could go to the zoo and look at them in cages. And over time, we looked at animals locked in a cage, and we said, that's cruel and unusual. So go to your zoo today, and they put the giraffes and the rhinoceroses and the elephants and all these critters out here and the gorillas and all. They put them in what they call a natural habitat. I mean, they got them locked in. You know, they got a big moat in the bear pen, you know, so that the bear, he can jump into the moat and he can swim. But he can't get up the straight up and down side on the other side and get out. But we don't lock him up in a cage. But we take human beings and we lock them up in cages. And that's what Mr. Dershowitz is advocating, that we take this man, don't kill him, that's cruel and unusual. But lock him up in a cage for 40 years, which is something we wouldn't even do to an animal. Now, I don't know about you city people out there, but out here in the countryside, we have animals. And animals get hurt once in a while. You know, a cow will break a leg. Or a horse will go down on you. You know, well, when I see an animal like that, I go in the house and I get a gun. And I come out and I shoot him right in the head, right behind the ear, which is instantaneous death. I mean, you just can't die any faster than a bullet in the brain. To demonstrate that, you know, you got a cow standing there in front of you. You shoot him between the eyes, you know, when you're butchering. And the cow just instantly drops to the ground. I mean, you got to see it to believe. I mean, you've been watching these movies, you know, when a guy gets shot, you know, he kind of staggers around for a little while and he finally falls down. That's BS. When that guy gets shot in the head, he goes down like a lead balloon. Now, you know, people criticize me. They say, well, you are despicable killing animals. Ladies and gentlemen, when we kill an animal, you know, we do it as mercifully as possible. I mean, I don't know of any farmer out here, you know, that would shoot a cow in the guts and then wait 3 days for her to die from gangrene before we butchered her. And if somebody did that, we'd string them up. We don't allow that. There isn't anybody that does that. When we kill something, we kill. Now, here's this argument going on over here concerning the death penalty. When you kill somebody by stoning them to death, they go into shock instantly, and when they get hit in the head with a rock. Now, of course, you probably got hit 15 times in the chest and stomach. Well, boys and girls, let me tell you something about this. When God designed you, he designed you so that when you suffer a traumatic injury, you don't feel any pain. And we call this shock. The guy goes into shock. I remember one time I was a kid, I had a 47 Merc, and I was driving down Broadway in Eureka one day. It was raining, and windshield wipers didn't work, and there's a Mercer Fraser dump truck and stopped at Wabash and Broadway. I didn't see him, and so I ran right in the back of it. I was going about 35 miles an hour. 35. And I hit the back of this dump truck. Now, when you hit the back of a dump truck at 35 miles an hour, they tell you that there's just two places for you to go. You either go over the steering wheel and through the windshield, or you go down under the steering wheel and end up down on the floorboards. Well, they were right, because I went down under the steering wheel and onto the floorboards as the seat broke loose and came forward and jammed me into the compartment down on the floor. And fortunately, they were able to get the door open, and some guy came over with a crowbar. And then the driver from the dump truck, you know, he had a couple of tools up there, and so they broke the seat loose, and they got me out of the car. And then they started looking me over, you know, looking for broken bones, you know. They checked my arms, and, you know, people standing by there because the cops hadn't come yet, you know. There's no ambulance here. And a guy asked me, he said, are you all right? And I looked around, and I said, yeah, I feel good. He said, do you hurt anywhere? Do your legs hurt? You know, I was jammed down between the seat and the pedals. I mean, there's no space down there for a human being. I was about 18 years old, you know. I probably weighed 160 pounds. I was an adult, and I'm down there on the floor. I'm jammed down, and I looked in there, and I could see there is not room for a human being down there on that floor, but that's where they got me out. So evidently there was room, and everybody thought, well, this guy must have broken bones. You can't take somebody and cram him into a space like that without breaking some bones. No, sir, there were no broken bones. And they said, well, should we call an ambulance? And I said, no. Well, why would you want to call an ambulance? I'm walking. I'm talking. I feel good. You know, everything's fine. There are no problems with me. And, you know, the police came and the wrecking company came and they towed the car away. And then I'm standing there looking for a ride, you know. And the policeman said, well, get in the car and I'll take you home. And so, you know, I live probably 10, 15 blocks away. And so got in the police car, and the policeman asked me, he said, now, would you like me to take you to the hospital so that they can check you out? And I said, well, I don't see any reason for it. I feel good and I don't hurt. I mean, I don't have any pains, none, zero, zilch. Not even my little finger hurts. And he said, well, you know, if you're feeling good and you're not hurt, well, I'll just take you home. So he drove me home, and that was the end of it. So about, you know, now some time has gone by, you know, between the time that I had the wreck, which was about 12:30, as I recall, and about 2 or 2:30 when I finally got home, or maybe 3 o'clock, something like that. About a half an hour, an hour after I got home, I started to hurt. And ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you that by 6 o'clock, I was in so much pain, I thought that I was going to die. I didn't think that you could hurt that bad and live. That's how bad that hurt. So now, in the case of capital punishment, when somebody's throwing rocks at you and you start getting pummeled and pain is building up, your body goes into shock and you don't feel a thing. There's no pain. None. Now, I've experienced that, and I suppose some of the rest of you out there probably experienced that too. You know, you've been shot. I was shot one time with a 22 in the head. I didn't feel any pain. Zero. There's no pain getting shot until about 3 hours later. And then the pain sets in. I fell off of a second story one time on a construction job. And I was hurt so bad that I couldn't get up and walk. I had to crawl about 300 yards over to a guy's house. And I didn't hurt bad, but boy, I'll tell you, after I got out of the hospital, they held me off in the meat wagon on that one. And when I got out of the hospital, I hurt bad just like I did off that auto accident. Now, the point I'm making is that when your body goes into shock, there's no pain. So when you're executing somebody and their body goes into shock, they're not feeling any pain. But locking somebody up in a cage for 30 or 40 years like Charlie Manson, I think we would have all been money ahead, and Manson would have been money ahead, and everybody in society would have been ahead by executing him 30 years ago. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio logs, our schedule, and the archive. That can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, and our phone number is 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about capital punishment, and is the death penalty rigged by racism? Well, he goes on to say, had McCluskey been white and the policeman black, there's virtually no chance that he would have received the ultimate penalty. The U.S. Supreme Court heard evidence that in Georgia, it is 10 times more likely that a black man who kills a white will be sentenced to death than it is for a white man who kills a black. All right, now Mr. Dershowitz brings up a very important point, because this is not from the scripture. This is not Christian, you know, quote unquote. God in the Bible in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and in a number of other places tells us to judge righteous judgment. In fact, he says that the stranger shall be with you as one that's homeborn, and that you're not to give any deference to the rich or the poor or the stranger or the homeborn. And there's more than one statute that covers that. So don't get mad at God now for racism. That did not come from the Mosaic Law. It comes from religion. I pointed that out to you yesterday. And it comes from religion from way back. It isn't something new, but it isn't something that's ever been changed either. When we're looking at adultery, it's the woman that we're out to punish, not the man. We all looked at Monica Lewinsky, you know, and said, oh my God, what a slut. And we all looked at Bill Clinton like, oh my God, what a stud. He's a hero, she's a tramp. Again, that does not come from the scripture, and the law requires that you stone both Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. Both of them should have been stoned to death, president or no president. Now, we don't do that in this country. We have a system of justice in this country that is our own. Women that commit adultery are tramps, sluts, trash. Men are heroes and studs, and that's our law. And we learn it in church. Now, the same thing is true here. If a black man kills a white man, oh, we've got to have capital punishment. White man kills a black, well, that's just part of business. That's the way life is. If he didn't die from the white man, he would have died in a car wreck or something else. No, sir, boys and girls, that's dead wrong. And I got to concede that Mr. Dershowitz has brought up a good point. And the blacks have complained about that for a long time, and rightfully so. And you can rest assured, all you blacks out there, that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses can well see what's been going on here. And there's a day of reckoning coming. And that day of reckoning ain't too far off, in my view. And we're going to get our comeuppance. And so sit back and relax. Vengeance is mine, says the Eternal. Now, if you want to take vengeance on us, you go ahead. But then if you do, God will back off. If you really want to stick it to us, all you blacks out there, if you really want to get us, what you do is let our God punish us. He will do 10 times what you people can't even imagine. If you want to see what our God is going to do to white Anglo-Saxons here in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you go to Deuteronomy chapter 28 and pay attention. And then he tells you very plainly, now here's what I'm going to do to you if you don't pay attention to me. All right, now with that out of the way, indeed between 1944 and September 6th of 1991, that's a period of 47 years, no white person had been executed in the entire United States for killing a black. Boy, that is something, because there's been a lot of blacks killed by whites. Surely there must have been a couple of them done with malice. And not a single person in 47 years ever paid the ultimate price. God requires that every single one of them be stoned to death. And in 47 years, we never killed one. Now, during that same period, more than 1,000 people had been executed, including hundreds of blacks who had been convicted of killing whites. In fact, a recent study of the nearly 16,000 executions recorded in this country since colonial times found that only 30 whites were executed for murdering blacks. Oh, my God. I hope this number is correct, Mr. Dershowitz, because I don't have any way to check this number out. I don't know where you got this number. And I'm going to presume that it's accurate. You wrote the book, and you know, you're the guy that said, during the same period of time, more than 1,000 people have been executed. Let's take it. There's 1,000 people executed, including hundreds of blacks who had been convicted of killing whites. In fact, a recent study of the nearly 16,000 executions recorded in this country since colonial time, going clear back here to George Washington, found that only 30 whites were executed for murdering blacks. Only 30 whites out of 16,000 executions. Yeah, that's, you know, you don't have to go to college to get a degree here to figure out that there's got to be something wrong with that. So again, sit back and relax, because the God of Abraham is not blind. He's about to take vengeance. There's about to be a day of reckoning here. And boy, that's going to be one stiff pill to swallow. Again, Deuteronomy 28. This brings us to another recent execution, this one in South Carolina on September 6, 1991. In that case, Donald Pee Wee Gaskins, a white man, was put to death for the contract killing of a black fellow inmate. He was the first white man in nearly 50 years to die for killing a black. But Gaskins was no ordinary killer. He has previously been convicted, and this may sound hard to believe, but he was previously convicted of 9 earlier murders. All of his prior victims were white. So in one sense, therefore, it may not be fair to categorize Gaskins' execution as one resulting from the murder of a black. He was sentenced to death, at least in part, for his prior record of killing whites. But even if Gaskins' execution is categorized as resulting from the killing of a black, the rarity, indeed the singularity, of such an execution during the past 46 years underlines the racism inherent in the process by which our legal system determines who shall live and who shall die. I like that one, Mr. Dershowitz. It underlies our legal system. It's not God's legal system that we're complaining about here. It's ours. And indeed, God himself complains about it. He told us twice. There's two statutes here. He says, don't you add to my law and don't you detract from it. In Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, he says, I've given you a complete law here. You got everything you need. I can run the whole damn universe on these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. Now pick that number. Write that down, kids. Get that number, 759. Get it down? All right. Your traffic code in your state has 2,000 statutes. Got that? 2,000 statutes. The Creator, now this is God, the guy that, you know, he doesn't use too many words. He says, thou shalt not steal. And we had to write up a whole Title 18 in the U.S. Code here to cover theft. He did it in 4 words. Thou shalt not steal. Get this. We have a constitutional provision. It's the second right that we have in the Bill of Rights. Guarantees us the right to keep and bear arms. All right. We have 25,000 statutes regulating guns in this country. You know, that law, if you were to construe it, just read it for what it says. You and I should be able to have an M1 tank in our backyards. I mean, the Bill of Rights is fairly straightforward. Now, of course, the enemies that want to take your guns away from you, they can't take your guns away from you, but they can regulate them like they do automobiles. They can't take your right to travel away, but they can sure regulate it until you can't use it anymore. It's not recognizable. You didn't get that from God. You got that from yourselves. Now, God told you not to add any laws, and don't take away from those laws that I've given you. We've done both. Obviously, God didn't give us enough laws. So you want to know why you're living in the People's Republic of Michigan. You know, a lot of times people write me letters. Well, this is from the People's Republic of North Dakota. This is the People's Republic of Florida. The reason that you're calling it the People's Republic is because these are your laws. These are not the laws of God that you're following here in the United States or Canada or Western Europe. These are your laws. You elect these politicians to go in here to your legislatures and give you all of these laws and rules and regulations. They've wrapped you up like a spider trussing up a fly with all these regulations and all these laws. God runs the universe on 759, and you've got 25,000 gun regulations and 2,000 traffic regulations. And here in the United States, we have 2.5 million laws. Do you know that? 2.5 million. God has 759, actually only 133. See, some of them are repeated. Some of them, you know, expound a little bit more on the subject matter. All right, so this brings us to another recent execution here in South Carolina. And he calls this our legal system, in which he reveals here that in 16,000 executions, there's less than 50 of them of whites killing blacks. Boy, that's racism, all right. The late Justice Potter Stewart, he was an Eisenhower appointee and certainly no liberal, once described the death penalty process as analogous to being struck by lightning. But being hit by lightning is truly random. A bolt of lightning does not pick its victims by race. The death penalty lottery, on the other hand, is rigged. It decides matters of life and death by the race of the defendant and the race of the victim and other invidious factors such as wealth, physical appearance, and the quality of counsel. Nor can the vast disparity between the number and percentage of executions based on the race of the defendant and the victim be explained by the fact that more blacks kill whites than whites kill blacks, or that black killers have longer records than white killers. Even taking these and other possible legitimate variables into consideration doesn't account for the historical or the current disparity. The only explanation for the phenomenal disparity is simply that the American legal system and its participants, the prosecutors, the judges, the jurors, the pardon boards, place a greater value on white life than on black life. It's a process that must be judged by its results. Our process obviously regards the killing of a white victim as a more serious crime, deserving of a more serious punishment than the killing of a black victim. And it also regards white killers as more deserving of sympathy than black killers. This disparity is unacceptable in a society premised on the equality of all citizens.
I challenge any criminologist, lawyer, or statistician to offer a non-racist explanation for the kind of disparity shown by the execution figures quoted above. These figures shift the burden of persuasion to those who would argue that our death penalty process is fair. It is a burden that cannot be met. Well, I mentioned that a little earlier in this series. I said that the death penalty that you're applying here in reality is vengeance. I mean, it's a process by which you kill people, all right, but it's not capital punishment. Capital punishment has two elements to it. It's got element number one is to solve the problem of this killer over here, because under the Mosaic law, we don't have any penitentiaries. And it's pretty obvious that having a guy that runs around killing, you know, it's kind of like dogs here. We have dogs, and I like dogs. I've got a dog. I have to keep my dog under control because two dogs make a pack. Two dogs will go out and kill sheep. One dog typically won't, but two dogs will. Three dogs, five dogs, 10 dogs, those make a pack of dogs. And they'll go out and they'll kill sheep. And so here, if we see a stray dog walking around, you know, on the ranch here, I'll just kill him. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We just shoot him. And that's because there's no rehabilitation for a sheep-killing dog. And we're not going to spend the time, effort, and energy to rehabilitate him, even if it were possible. So then that solves that problem. So you got to do something with this guy. So when you got a Charlie Manson, I mean, this guy has to be killed. Well, it's either that or you got to lock him up and put him in a cage, you see. We're going to put him in this cage here, you know, like we wouldn't do to an animal, but we'll do this to a human being. And then we've got this process, and we say, well, we've got a constitutional provision here that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. I can't think of anything more cruel or unusual. All of you people out there are up in arms about chicken farmers locking their chickens up in cages or locking hogs up in cages. What do you think about locking human beings up in cages? So I don't think that execution is, in fact, before you lock me up for 40 years in a cage, would you just shoot me? Would you just put me out of my misery and let me come up in the second resurrection, you know, and let God deal with me when the time is right? But don't torture me. Huh? Kind of like those guys down in Guantanamo. If I was in Guantanamo, I would say to my captors, why don't you just kill me? Why don't you just put me out of my misery? Would you please? Just take me over there against the wall, shoot me in the back of the head, throw me in a hole in the ground, and let God deal with me when the time is right. But don't torture me and stick, you know, poke sticks at me. Once in a while, you know, you catch a coon, you know, in a trap. And then what are you going to do? Go over there and poke sticks at him and torment him? That's what you get from religion. See, religion comes along and says, well, you've been bad, so we're going to throw you into hell and torment you for eternity. We're going to torment you forever. Well, what did I do? Well, for 50 years while you were alive, you were a bad person. And because you were bad for 50 years, we're going to punish and torment you for billions and billions and trillions of years. What in the hell is the matter with people that have a mindset like that? That's sadism that just trumps sadism. I've never talked to a sadist or seen or heard of anybody. Even Ted Bundy didn't do that to his victims. But that's what the clergy's telling you. That's what they want. That's what they're teaching. They didn't get that from the Bible, by the way. They didn't get that from the Creator, but they got that from their God, whoever that is. Now, Dershowitz over here, you know, he's got a logical argument here. This is a valid argument. And the third side of the argument from the Bible supports Dershowitz's position. It's against the law for us to do this. You can't go out here and oppress strangers within your gate. It violates the stranger statute. Now, we've been oppressing these blacks in this country, you know, from day one. First of all, we went over to Africa and kidnapped them, which is the death penalty of them by itself. Just going over there and kidnapping those people was worthy of death. Then we brought them over here and made them slaves. Not that slavery was against the law. Slavery is a social status created by God himself. But we never used the slave statute according to the scripture. Then we oppressed the slaves. Then one day we freed the slaves, and now we're still oppressing them by executing a higher number of them, and we don't do the same with the blacks. That violates the stranger statute. Now, there's penalties that come down for that. And that's why I said to you blacks out there, just sit back and relax. Sit back and relax. There isn't anything that you people can dream up over there that you're going to do to the white over here that you hate so much. That the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob isn't going to do to us in spades. Now, the crowning injustice of Warren McCluskey's execution is that Georgia may well have executed the wrong man. McCluskey has admitted participating with three others in the robbery, but he has always denied being the one who shot the police officer. The other robbers were not sentenced to death. McCluskey was convicted of the shooting on the basis of the uncorroborated testimony of a cellmate who swore that McCluskey had confessed to him. Now, what did God tell us about the testimony of a witness? He said, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. You don't do it at the mouth of one witness, especially a convict whose word is probably no good to start with. And so here's Dershowitz coming along complaining now, saying, hey, wait a minute, we've only got one witness over here. It's uncorroborated. Well, who came up with this kind of law anyway? You didn't get this from the God of Abraham. You got this from Dianne Feinstein, Ted Kennedy. You got this from your legislators, the people that you're electing to public office who are making your laws for you. Now, in 1 Samuel chapter 8, I believe it is, you know, God came along and he said, now listen, you people are making a mistake. He warned us then. He said, you people are making a mistake. That's the chapter that you know, our forefathers, they got up on their high horse and they said, hey, God, we've had enough of you. We want a king like all the nations around us. God said, hey, you're making a mistake now. And we said, well, nevertheless, we're going to have a king. God, you know, he's a pretty accommodating guy. You know, he said, okay, well, I'll back off and butt out. But this is going to come back and bite you in the butt. And it has. And this is just another example of it. The injustices that you see going on around you over here, you people can't come up with a justice system that's going to come anywhere close to the creator of the universe. I mean, that guy is a master lawmaker. He's a master lawyer. He's a master judge. There isn't anybody out here. There isn't any Alan Dershowitz that's going to be a better lawyer than the Messiah or God Almighty himself. There isn't any judge that's going to be any better at administering the law than the creator of the universe. There isn't going to be any parliament or any king or potentate, any legislative body that's going to make any laws that are any more just, equitable, or fair, or righteous than the creator of the universe. It ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened. And the experiment that we've all been involved in now, all of our lives, has failed. And this book by Alan Dershowitz over here is a classic. I'm going to rate this about a 1 in 100 rate. It's written on the same format as Andy Rooney with little short vignettes, little short stories. But Andy Rooney is a humorist. You know, Andy Rooney, you know, he's just an entertainer. He doesn't have anything intelligent to tell you. He's got some neat little stories over here to tell you about human nature, and then they're kind of fun and they're funny, and I enjoy Andy Rooney. But Dershowitz has something intelligent to say. His conclusions are not scriptural. They don't come from the Bible, but then he's not claiming that his conclusions are scriptural. But I think that this story right here is very, very indicative of his mind. And he has pointed out a fault, and it's a fault that ought to be corrected. So there's the story. It's Alan Dershowitz, and the book is called Contrary to Popular Opinion. Contrary to Popular Opinion, Alan Dershowitz. Get a copy. I'm sure you will be thrilled. Hey, I'm about out of time, so I've got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.